Dr. K.K. Mistry, Professor Emeritus, feels honored to be in the Sai family formally since 1964 and almost half a century to date. Swami blessed him to start the Sri Satya Sai Seva Dal in 1968. He was, by his grace, chairman of then Bombay Sri Satya Sai Seva Samiti and privileged to take part in the initiation, construction and inauguration of Dharmakshetra. Swami first started the Sri Satya Trust Maharashtra, of which he is the chairman, and currently Dr. Mistry is the senior trustee. He would be sharing with us with the topic, Sai Signpost Along the Path of Life, Traveled with Love. Let us warmly welcome Dr. Mistry on stage.
On the stage with a lot of people because I can't bend down and touch your feet. He said, Banme karo, do it in the mind. So I said, yes, I can do it in the mind, but people will feel, look at this guy. He's not even bending down, touching Swami's feet. What do you care for the world? He says, I know. We bow to thee, O Lord, Satya Sai. All names are yours, all forms are yours. With folded hands we ask of thee the gift of the good mind, so that we may think good thoughts, speak good words, and do good deeds. Forever keep us on the path of satya, of truth, so that we may walk life's highways and byways without fear or favor, with love in our hearts, your name on our lips, and good actions flowing through our hands, knowing that work is worship and duty is God, loving all, serving all, helping ever, hurting never. This prayer we ask of thee, Sai, to grant not only us present here, but all those millions who love you. Before I start, can I make a small request? Can each of you, with folded hands, say to each and everyone who is your neighbor, Pyar se bolo, Sai Baba Jai. Thank you. First of all, I can only talk to you about what happened to me. I've been with Swami now over 50 years, but I think much more before that. But anyway, let me talk about myself. The very fact that you are listening to me, that you can hear me, is a miracle of Swami. In 1964, I was speaking like this. This was exactly my voice. I'm not joking. And when they examined me, they found that I had a tumor the size of a golf ball in my nasopharyngeal area. The nasopharyngeal area means between the nose and the lungs passage here at the back. It's such an area that it is very dangerous because a vein runs right from there to the brain. And, you know, when you speak, voice is a trap sound. You know, if you've got a couple of teeth missing, you'll go like that when you would speak. So voice is a trap sound. Well, they found that I had a tumor this big. And one thing or the other, finally, that's a long story if I tell you how, but I landed up at Swami's gate. I went to visit him at the house of a minister. And you know, with police security and everything there. And I didn't know a thing about Swami. But I'd only heard, because I was desperate, a drowning man clings at a straw. And perhaps you are hearing this for the first time with me, yes. I don't know why I feel involved to tell you this at the beginning of any talk, but I just felt that I should talk to you about this. And the policeman did not allow me inside. Because, I mean, I had no such appointment. He said, Swami is retired. It's 12 o'clock in the afternoon. Swami doesn't see anyone now. You please go and come back at 4 o'clock. I stood across the road mentally, you know, from the house. And I made a prayer. Nothing happened till about 1:45. It was very hot and I was quite a sick man. And I mentally said, well, I'll wait here till 2. Suddenly, a window opens. And Swami says, like this. Now, the policeman's back is towards the house. So he has not seen Swami Kolbe. So I rushed to that. He said, what is the matter with you? You look like an educated man. Why are you bothering me? You can't go inside. You can't go inside. I said, Swami has called me. He said, where? So I looked. Swami was not there. Swami was not there. And then suddenly Swami came down. He was two flights up. Swami came down and he stood on the veranda. And he just did like this. Now, you know, a year or so ago, somebody had given me a picture of Swami. And I said, who is this joker with a red gown and fuzzy hair? I honestly made that statement. But I saw him, and I felt completely at peace. Completely at peace. And he was just waving his arms like this. And he takes one look at me and says, your mother is not well. But he doesn't answer me to him. So I said, mother has not been well for the last 40 years. She was an asthmatic. Come tomorrow at 9 o'clock. Bring her. So I said, the police won't allow me inside. So he speaks to someone and he gives me a pass for two people. So I went home. Mother was very happy to come with me. And if Swami had called me at 9 o'clock, he had called 200 other people at 9 o'clock. But everyone was in a state of sickness. I remember a young girl groaning away because she had a tumor in the mind and all that. And like a doctor's clinic, you know, we were all sitting there. And Swami called me number four, on the fourth person to be called. I stood in front of him. And he and my mother stood there. And he almost sort of, you know, almost sort of showed his shoulder to be back to me, totally ignored me, and went on telling mother that she had asthma, she was breathing like this. Now it's no great rocket science to tell mother that she was asthmatic because she looked asthmatic. And everybody, and he described the symptoms. Mother was not interested in herself. She was, but, yeah, I know. Now look, I was looking as normal as I'm looking now. He said, I know. Upar hai, lump hai, lump. Negative thoughts, positive thoughts, should I get operated? Because I have seen in my life three such cases. And the operation removes the tumor, but leaves the person just as bad to speak because there's a big gaping hole in the palate. And so he says, malum hai, negative thoughts, positive, and all that. So mother asked the million-dollar question that she wanted to ask. She said, is it cancer? Swami, you know, took a step back. Cancer? He said, cancer? He's not your son. He's my boy. He has only come through you. He can't have cancer. Then he leans towards me and says, go, you'll be all right. That's all, as if it was, he didn't even see. And then he asked mother, hold out your hand. So now this is her first experience of Swami. And he waved his hand. And he filled her hand with ash. So she didn't know. She said, what should I do with this ash? He said, very far, eat it. Now I'm looking back, if he had not told the old lady to eat it like that, I think she would never have swallowed it. But she swallowed the whole thing. I went back. And I was dismissed. As of now, no consequence. I went back and I told mother, look, mother, I'm talking. You see, now before that, you must try and understand that for 3 years, I haven't slept straight. I could not sleep. I was always sitting and sleeping the whole night through, almost, because I couldn't, because that whole thing was choking my throat. I'm telling mother, I'm feeling very normal. I went home. I was absolutely normal. My symptoms all disappeared. I dared not show myself to my doctor again. I thought this was all psychology. I'm just being psyched into feeling I'm all right. And I carried on like that. And Swami left Bombay. This was in Bombay that he saw me. 6 months passed. And one morning I got up and I coughed a lot and I spat some blood. I got very nervous. So without having a drop of water, I ran to my ENT surgeon, who was one of India's leading ENT surgeons. And I said, sure. He said, you're very tense. I can't examine you. Let me induct you. Induction means not give complete anesthesia, just make it enough for you to be relaxed. So he inducted me. And then he told me, come on now, tell me what happened. I said, you tell me what happened. He said, the tumor is not there. What's happened? I said, I don't know. Then I told him this story. He said, go, go. I have heard stories of this. You are blessed. Go. This tumor. So now I can speak, and that is itself a miracle of Baba. So let me... The claps are all for him. Let me tell you a couple of more incidences. Let me tell you about Mr. Patel, a friend of mine, who married late in life. Mr. Patel married at the age of 40. For 3 years, they did not have a child. And then they had a young baby girl. They had a daughter. If God gives children, he should not give children like this. You know, if I take my kerchief, and I throw it down, and how the kerchief crumples, the child was like that. It was born with a muscular problem. And at the age of 3, could just barely, it was like a vegetable, could just roll his eyes a little, make some guttural sound, like that. And that's about all the child could do. Now, Patel was not a rich man, but he spent a fortune trying everything for this child. Then somebody told him, in the south of India, there is a gentleman known as Sai Baba. He will cure this person. But Patel went home and told his wife. She said, no, 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 I don't believe in all this. This is all black magic. I'm not going there. And 6 months went away like this, and the child got worse. So Patel got desperate. He said, I will take a picture of this girl and I will go and meet this gentleman. So he found out how to go to Puttaparthi. He said, I landed there at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You know, it was the old ashram where there's a room on the first floor where Swami sleeps, recites. And there's a room there where he has his tiffin. And he crosses that veranda. And normally he stops by and people are downstairs. And so he looked and he said, if you are a man of God, this is my problem, help me. He said, Swami never even looked at him, but Swami passed by. Then he asked people, they said, you sit down here, Swami will come, he might call you for an interview. Then as he was sitting, somebody said, I've been here for 2 weeks. I have not been called. Somebody said, I was here for a month and I've not been called. He got very upset because he had taken only 10 days leave and he was a salesman. Well, at about 4:15 or so, he says, Swami came out. Swami came smiling right towards him, but didn't look at him. And he says, Swami picked up a person to the right of him. Swami picked up a person to the left of him. Swami picked up a person in front of him. Swami picked up a person behind him. And went. So he says, what should I do? He said, doesn't matter. Tomorrow morning you come, have a bath and come here. Again, there's an interview. There's an interview in the morning and there's an interview in the evening. So he went in the morning. And would you believe it? The same thing happened. Swami picked up a person in the front of him, behind him. He was left completely stranded. Then he said he tried during bhajans to get Swami's attention. He stood in the queue, when Swami was passing by, he tried to get his attention. Swami would not look at him at all. 10 days passed and his leave had already expired. But he sent a telegram that leave is extended. And he stayed there. He was desperate. He was losing money and the child had no hope. He says, on the 13th or 14th day, a gentleman comes out from the ashram and said, he said there were about 200 people left at that time, there in the ashram. Swami is leaving Prashanti. All may leave, all are blessed. He said, I became absolutely mad. With rage. He said, what is this? I've been here so many. In the meantime, he saw people driving up to the ashram in cars, some people coming up. He said, oh, this is all a play of richness, or all rich people are going, or all ministers are going up. This is all his thought processes. And on the 13th or 14th day, somebody came up and says, all may go now, all are blessed. He got absolutely, he said, I can't face my wife. What shall I do? So he went on the railway tracks and he laid down. He said, let me die. But you know, in India, the trains run late. And he was on the tracks for about an hour and a half. And then the thought started. You know, the sun was beating his eyes. Is it fair? Should I die? Should I leave my daughter? I mean, my wife alone with my daughter? Is it there? So he finally got up. And on the 18th day after he had left, he finally reached his house. He opened his door. And there he saw the child whom he had left as a vegetable. Sitting on the floor, play. You know, he said, I put my, even now, I am moved. He put my bag down and he said, I cried. That child whom he had left with the vegetable was sitting there. And when she saw her father, whom she had not seen for a long time, got up, taught her to his father, and then went there. He said, I just put my bag down and cried. And his wife said, from the time he was making that point, if you are a man of God, help me, this miracle happened. That is one thing. Let me tell you another thing about myself. My mother had terminal cancer. And she was terminal. She was not going to survive. And when I asked Swami about her, he looked at me very pointedly and said, what doctor, should people live forever? He said, should people live forever? So I thought she was going. So, I mean, whenever Swami comes to Mumbai, is there a problem? Sorry. Whenever Swami comes to Mumbai, I'm one of those who has chosen to be with him in his room. I mean, draw his water, you know, attend to his clothes, bring his tiffin inside. I'm one of those three people who are allowed to do that. We're sort of on duty every time Swami comes to Mumbai. And every time he has come to Mumbai, he has blessed my house with a visit. He always comes there either for lunch or for snacks or something, or for blessing us, really. And, one day Swami was there. Now in Mumbai, Swami stays on top of a hill. And downstairs people are there, Dharmakshetra, and where the crowd gathers for darshan. And I got a phone call in the night, on Friday night, saying mother is not conscious, she's been removed to hospital, and the thing doesn't look promising. Now at that time, Swami had already closed the door. Swami had already closed the door. So I said, I can't ask Swami for leave. I can't come. But is mother needing me? They said, mother is not conscious. Then I said, give the phone to my father. I asked my father, do you need me? He said, no, you be there only. At that time, some of my sisters and all gave me a real wallop on, what is this nonsense? You're not coming here. Then they put the doctor who had treated her, a very famous surgeon. He was sheepishly, he said, look, your family is asking me to speak to you. But I don't think the old lady will last the night. So I didn't know what to do. I said, give the phone back to my father. I asked my father, do you need me? He said, no, you can stay there. And next morning, that Saturday morning, Swami opens the door at 7 o'clock and then immediately takes a paper as if to read. And I'm standing there. He completely blocks my view. You know, I'm standing there. I stood for about 3 or 4 minutes and then... I'm allowed to enter his room. So I made a, yeah, yes. I said, you know, I got a phone call from the house saying that mother is in hospital and she's not conscious and she's been admitted and she's serious. So Swami, can I have your permission to go? I'll go and see her. He says, I'll go and see her. This is Saturday morning. Your mother is in the same hospital where Savan's house is, isn't it? And I'm going to Savan's house to visit. So I will stop by in the hospital to see your mother. I said, Swami, yes. I'm going on Wednesday. This is Saturday morning. He says, I'm going on Wednesday. Listen to this carefully. He says, I'm going on Wednesday. So I said, thank you, Swami. I didn't say anything. And I said, now, Swami, can I go? No. You stay here. You go with me. Come with me. I mean, who can say this with such authority? When one of the famous surgeons says that the patient will not last the night, Swami says, don't worry. You come with me. We'll go on Wednesday. I said, can I go and visit? No need. No need. Now, when Swami says no need means I can't go. This is our discipline. I mean, we're just with Swami. I can't go. So I phoned up. By that time, mother had regained consciousness. And she said also, no, let him stay there and pray. Let him stay with Swami. Don't call him here. But I did not tell them that Swami said he will come on Wednesday because with Swami, you never know. I didn't know whether he was just consoling me or whether he would really go. And it was the Parsi General Hospital, and the Parsis are pretty orthodox fellows. And I didn't know whether Swami will go to the hospital, and I had not told him which hospital. So I didn't tell them anything. I didn't want to raise their hopes. Well, come Wednesday morning, Swami sits in the car, says, come with me. We'll go to the hospital. And he directs the driver to the hospital. Now, from the hospital, I'm from where Swami is staying, to the hospital, about an hour and 15 minutes drive at Warden Road, if you're familiar with Bombay. He goes up to her, and you know what mother does? She fires him. What is the matter with you? You are leaving all those people's darshan there, and you come to see an old lady? Swami turns around, knocks me on the head, and says, see, this is devotion. As if I'm doing it. See, this is called devotion, he says. And then mother was conscious, you know, that he has come to visit us. So she had only a coconut. She didn't know. So she had only a coconut water. She said, have some. I'm not the patient. You are the patient. You please lie down. So she lied down. Then he sat on her bed next to her. Then he applied vibhuti, took out vibhuti from her head to the toe. He applied vibhuti. He just spread it all around. Then he talked to her for 20 minutes. And mother and he had a great, great, great thing going between them. Great thing going. And talked to her for 20 minutes. And then he left. The next day, I got a wallop from the hospital. I thought they were such a big person comes and you don't tell us. We would have received him well, all that. So that's that. Mother died 2.5 years later. Now, this is Swami's grace. On Friday or Saturday morning, he tells me, we'll go on Wednesday. With what authority? This is the type of person that we are talking about. Now I come to the signpost that I've been asked to speak on. When George Bernard Shaw, one of the greatest brains of the 20th century, George Bernard Shaw, you all heard his name, he was speaking to a group of people. He said, I do not wish to lead my life as a tiny flame, flicker of a flame, rather as a blazing cauldron to be held for a while and then to be passed on as a roaring flame. That's what he said. Not as a flicker, tiny flicker of a flame, but as a blazing cauldron to be held for a while and then to be passed on as a roaring flame. So someone from the audience asked him, as someone from the audience always will. He said, why, sir, what do you propose to do to change the world? George Bernard Shaw pulled himself up to his full height. He was a short man. He had very bushy eyebrows. He looked piercingly with his piercing eyes at that question. He said, why, sir, do you want to change the world? Change yourself, and there'll be one fool less in this world. Now that's the whole idea of Swami's descent as an avatar. Change yourself. This is what we've got to understand. Now, in 1978, in a small town in Russia called Almaty, the WHO chief uttered these words: to move forward with vision, it is wise to glance backwards with wisdom, not to blame ourselves or our predecessors, but to learn lessons from history as a springboard for the future. Now, what do we do? We're looking back. What do we see? Let us look back and what Swami has taught us. Now, the stories that I'm going to tell you are real life stories. They have been told at the feet of Swami, as Swami has often corrected me. Let us come to the first signpost, looking backwards. Don Giovanni Fagilini, I hope I'm pronouncing it right, was a violin player of great repute. Those who are familiar with Western classical music will know the name of Fagilini. Very, very, very famous violinist. But he was from Italy. And in Paris, at the Royal Opera House in Paris, there was a musical sammelan, a musical concert of all musicians. In the audience were the crowned heads of Europe and the greatest music critics of that era. And Faginini's turn came to play. Faginini was to play solo. And he had his very famous violin with him. So Faginini was turning the violin, tuning the violin when he sent to play. He was tuning the violin. And he walked onto the stage, tuning his instrument, when zing, one string broke. There was dead silence in the audience. Faginini went on tuning his violin when the second string broke. At that time, there was a bit of a titter in the audience. You know, some people laughed. Some people, you know, Pagini quietly went on tuning his instrument when the third string broke. The violin is four strings. Now, Swami says, what do you learn from this experience? Paganini with one string, Paganini, you know what he did? He took that violin, he went to the center of the stage, held the violin aloft, and said, Paganini and one string, and played one of the most beautiful pieces of music that has come down to us. Now, Paganini says, the violin has four strings. The first string represents your family. Your family, your members, your friends, your colleagues, the break. He still went on playing. The second string represents your support systems. What, your clerk, your steno, or this thing breaks down, whatever your support systems are, that breaks down. Your cameraman, or whoever, whatever work you're doing. The third string represents your colleagues. They might let you down. The fourth string represents your Atma Vishwas, your self-confidence, which gives you that Atma Shakti. It's a beautiful Indian word. Atma Vishwas gives you the Atma Shakti. Your self-confidence gives you that strength to go on. This is the lesson you've got to learn. No excuses in life. In the spiritual life, you have to have that self-confidence. You are the best. You are knowing the avatar of the age. You have to know about all his teachings. You have to learn about it. And you have to be firm in your conviction and in your faith. Because remember, when you were created, your mold was broken down and thrown away. What does that mean? That means you are an individual. There is nobody like you. So there is no sense comparing, oh, she is more beautiful, or he is more rich, or he is more powerful, or I am not powerful. There is no mold like you. So Swami says, you must understand the mold. The mold is you. You've got to be better today than you were yesterday, and still better tomorrow. You are in competition with yourself, and you have to be better to please him. I'll come to that a little later about pleasing him, but that's the whole idea. So that is the signpost number one as we go along the path of life. What is the signpost? Self-confidence. Atma Vishwas, as we say. Okay, let's go to... Now, how do you get this confidence? It's so easily said. Well, let me tell you the story of the Mittals. You have heard of Lakshmi Mittal? Some of the richest Indians, the steel magnate. Well, Lakshmi's father, Mohan, wanted to build a steel factory. Now, we found that the tax laws in India were not favorable to him. So he went to Jakarta in Indonesia, and he decided to build the best steel plant in the whole of Asia. So for that, he got a workforce of the best engineers, the best structural people, the best welders, the best wood carvers, the best bricklayers, everybody the best to make that factory. Now the problem came, if everyone is equally good, who will be the foreman of that group? Who can be the foreman of that group? So he decided on a plan. Mohan Mittal, smart man. He went to one person who was mixing cement. And he said, sir, what are you doing? He said, I am mixing cement. He went to a second person who was cutting wood. And he said, sir, what are you doing? And he said, I'm cutting wood. He went to a third person who was welding. He said, what are you doing? He said, I'm welding. So on until he came to a bright young spark. And he said, sir, what are you doing? Now, that fellow was cutting wood. And he said, I am engaged in the task of building the best and the most superlative steel factory in the whole of Asia. He was cutting wood. But he had the total picture in mind. You can only get self-confidence if you have the total, whatever work you are doing, you are part of the total picture. And what is that total picture? You've got to understand this. Swami has made it very easy for us. He has given us organizations at the individual level, at the family level, at the community level. But all these organizations are meant for our training, our seva. Am I getting too serious? I don't look like I'm preaching, am I? No, I'm sorry. I'm just trying to tell you, but I sound like a teacher that I am. So what was I saying? So he decided, oh, that man is going to be the foreman because he has a total concept in mind. Now, I see this object. This is a glass of water here. How do I see it? I see it with my senses. Anything. You see Swami's form. How do you recognize this form? You see it with your senses. You see it with your eyes. You hear Swami with your ears. You speak to Swami with your tongue. Sometimes you touch him and you feel him. So every object that we see in this world are through our external senses. And when that object is removed, suddenly you feel lost. Some people feel lost because the object of your affection is not there. The object of which you touch, the object of which you feel is no more there. And therefore they feel lost. So they run here and thither where somebody says, oh, I've got the object. Somebody says, I've got the object. People run around. Why? Because they don't have the total picture. They do not understand Swami's teachings. Why are you? Swami says, when you see this, internalize it yourself. Once you internalize it, he is always with you. You understand? Swami has given so many hints. He has often said, near are not dear. I may have spent 50 years with him, but you may be much more dear to him than me. Because I wasted those 50 years. Swami often says, you call me God. Yes, I am God because I know it. But you are also God. You've got to realize that Swami is in you, in each and every one of you. You have not internalized Swami, though you can go through the entire text that Swami has given, and he has mentioned this a million times. If you want references, please ask me. I'll give you references for that, where Swami has himself said. But you don't internalize Swami. So you're not aware of the total picture, and some people feel lost. They run hither and thither, and people who consider that as the only value are the justifiable victims of such a person. You become a victim, isn't it? Are you with me? Am I making sense? Yeah. You see, we see the external world through our senses. But Swami says, concentrate, meditate, contemplate. You concentrate on my form, and you meditate on my form while I'm there. And contemplate means when I'm not there, you contemplate my form inside you. This we have not done. We have not realized this. And when we do not internalize, this was the reason for him to come. What is the reason for him to appear in one body or the other body when the whole idea of the body sense is his teachings? His whole teachings is internalize me. Internalize me. I am also Sai. You are also Sai. You got to realize this. Oh, it's blasphemy. Christian once killed me almost when I said, Christ wants you to be Christ. He said, blasphemy. I cannot be Christ-like. I said, I'm not meaning anything. I love Christ. I said, I don't mean any disrespect. What I mean is the Sermon on the Mount is meant for you to understand the qualities that you should have to become Christ-like, to become Sai-like. So you have got to know the total picture. So the second signpost that we've got to put up, first is the self-confidence. The second signpost you're going to put up is know the total picture. What is the third signpost? Let me tell you again by a story. The year was 2001. The place was Dublin in Ireland. And the Paralympics was on. You know what the Paralympics are? The Olympics of the differently advantaged people. The Paralympics was on. And the 100 meters mixed race, that is the females and the males together, the 100 meters race was on. The gun was fired. I know there were 10 people in the race. One was lame, one was mentally mongoloid, another was visually deficient, so on and so forth. And the 100 meters race, the starter fired the gun, and they all went forward. They all surged forward. Now, mind you, this is the Olympics. Each one was representing their country. You know, the gun, each one surged forward. When in lane 5, there was a noise. And Fred, who was on crutches, fell. You know what happened? Everyone stopped. Whole race stopped. Everyone went to race. One person picked him up, one person dusted his clothes. The girl with the mongoloid head just pecked him on the cheek and said, there, Fred, everything will be all right. Then they did the most famous thing that was reported in the newspapers. I don't know how young you are. I am 81, so I do not know. But I remember this because I was there. There were 45,000 people in the auditorium in Dublin. They linked hands together and they ran towards the goal. The war was lost, but the battle was won. They showed to the world, we may be troubled, but we together, we are finishing the race. So everyone cannot do everything, but everyone can do something, and together we can do many things together. So what is it, the third sign or the second sign? The third sign is togetherness, cohesiveness. Sometimes in our organization we have ego conflicts, we have splits. Not necessary. You are a mold in yourself. He is as important to me as he is, and he is as good as he is or I am. It is internal. He has to justify himself in front of Swami. Sorry. Right? So that's am I being too serious? But I think I'm talking of a serious matter, really, because it disturbs me that after all these years of being with Swami, we have not understood what Swami wants us to be. He is to be like him. The previous speaker made a point about it, being like Sai. I think it's a beautiful point. I was standing with Swami in Prashanti Nilaya when a British couple, I think middle-aged couple, came up to Swami and said, Swami, you have done so much for us. And we've got a lot of money. And we want to offer you some money. Swami said, no, you can keep your money, use it for yourself. No, no, Swami, we want to use it for your work and we want to offer you a huge amount. And he said, this is, we have made a lot of money and we want to give it to you. So Swami says, why do you want to give it to me? No, Swami, it'll help in your work, it'll please you. You want to please me? Then listen how you will please me. Now listen carefully. I was a witness to this. You want to please me? Then you see with the eyes that Swami sees. You talk with the tongue that Swami talks. You do your work with the tongue that Swami's hands are working. You walk where you think Swami's legs are working. Can there be any more indication that he wants us to be like him? This is the reason. Then you will please me. Then Swami will be pleased. If you are like Swami, if you think like Swami, if your thoughts are that clear, if your walk is that clear, if your hands are that clear, if your vision is that clear. You know, I was blessed with lovely parents. They gave me one single thought. If the mind is clear and the heart is pure, there should be no fear. And it's helped beautifully. Your mind should be clear, your heart should be pure. And so it is easy to accept Swami's statement, though I am not a Hindu, I am not a Muslim, I am a Zoroastrian, but it goes along. Good thoughts, good words, good deeds. Be good, do good, see good, is what Swami says. It goes along with the teachings. If you look at it, truth can never change, no matter what name you give it. Truth is truth, and it remains one. God never created religions. God, if you want to call God as an entity, not God as a person or with eyes or ears and nose, but as an entity. Once Swami was speaking at a public speech, and I was sitting behind him along with a lot of other people. Suddenly the thought came into my mind. It was a huge stadium, a lot of people. I said, here is the concretized form of our Atma speaking. The concrete form of all our Atma speaking. And Swami was like this, you know, it's a huge audience. He turns around, I was sitting almost perfect. He turns around 90 degrees, looks at me and smiles. Do you understand this? So the third, is it? Fourth. Four. What is the fourth one? Oh, I'm going to say the fourth one now. But what is the third one? Together. You're not sleeping. I am. The fourth one, Swami says, somebody said this very beautifully, you know, Swami says, love. One of the most important things is love. A song is not a song unless it is sung. A book is not a book unless it is read. A poem is not a poem until you write it. Love is not love until you share it. You know, let's say, you must share love. You have love and you must share love. You must become love. In India, many of you understand Hindi? In India, our ancient poets have, I will translate it into English, our ancient poets have said for many years, ye duniya hai, wahan dil ka lagana kisko aata hai? Questions asked. Dil ka lagana kisko aata hai? Hazaro pyar karte hai. Nibana kisko aata hai? In this world of ours, millions say they love. But who understands the real meaning of love and the duty associated with that love? You know, I have a famous orthodontic friend of mine who is no more, who is very devoted to Baba, Dr. Ricketts. He is a world famous name. And Ricketts had a 20-point program for the success of a treatment. 20 points. And you know what his first point was? Ricketts was my teacher. But that's besides the point. We got to know each other better in the ashram. But he said, first thing was love. Now, when we were kids, we were all, when he said love, we were all, you know, being naughty with each other. But if you realize what he's saying, if you love, first love, you must love yourself. You must not forget that. If you do not love yourself, I don't mean a narcissistic tendency, I love yourself with the idea you must respect yourself. Because if you don't love yourself, if you don't respect yourself, you can never love anyone else. You cannot. You're just making a pretense of liking them. You must love yourself. Then when you love the other person, you love your patients, you'll do the best you can for them. You'll use the best equipment for them. You'll use the best diagnostic skills, etc., etc., etc. So love is one of the most important things that keeps the world going, that keeps the thread going. Swami has a stupa with a lotus flower on top. I've got a sample of that which I wish to give it to Hari. Can I have that stupa? Is Dr. Hari here? Oh, there you are. I'm sorry. Sorry. Hari, I wanted to at this time perhaps present it to you because it forms part of the. Swami has this stupa. It has the emblem. This is in crystal. This represents the mind, the unfolding petal of the mind, the intellect. It has a stem, and it has four facets: Satya, Dharma, Shanti, Ahimsa. That means truth, righteous living, peace, and non-violence. And it is supported on the stem of love. This is the stupa. This is the stem of love. This is the unfolding pattern of the mind. Sir, may I? If you don't mind, don't stand up for the organization. I'm not giving it, sir. He's giving it. So now what is that? Young lady, you are the one keeping score for me. Tell me. I'm on four. One, what was the fourth one? Love. Okay. Fifth one, Swami says, develop a sense of humor. Develop a sense of humor. Humor will not solve anything, perhaps. It will solve your attitude. It will change your attitude towards the problem, if you have a problem. Don't you? Swami is very humorous. And many of his humorous digs have been leveled at me. One morning, I was at Prashanti Nilayam. And at 6 o'clock in the morning, a volunteer comes running. Swami is calling you. Now, I was fully dressed. I was fully ready, but I didn't have my cup of tea. So I stupidly said, I haven't had my tea as yet. Now, in those days, you know, the cup of tea was a very important thing of my regime in life. In those days, now if I have tea or don't have tea, it doesn't matter. But in those days, you know, you had to have a cup of tea, hot tea. I said, but anyway, he said, Swami's calling you, quick. The volunteer was a little more officious than I thought. I said, okay, I ran there. Swami was standing there by, and his car was there. He said, sit down inside. So I sat down. He told me to sit in front. The driver was driving. Raja Reddy, I think, was the driver. He was driving. And Swami took two other boys at the back. Now, sometimes Swami makes a round, early morning round, of all the hamlets around Prashanti Nilayam. He sometimes goes around there. Little hamlets, little villages, you know, around a little cluster of huts. So we went to the first cluster of huts. And everybody got excited. The whole village came out, Swami there. And one lady brought a glass of tumbler of warm milk. Now, you know, in Andhra, the Andhra tumbler is a tumbler. It's not this glass. It's a tumbler. of milk, you know, and she offered it to Swami. So Swami dipped his finger inside and said, thank you, you take it. No, no, Swami, you drink it, she said. So I was watching from the corner of my eye. Swami had dipped his finger. So Swami said, give it to him. I said, yes, Swami. So give it to him. So I was not going to refuse because Swami had put his finger inside and I didn't have my tea. So I drank. So I drank the whole milk. I said, thank you, Swami. And we went to the next hamlet. A lot of people, in that hamlet, another lady came with a tumbler of water. And before anything, Swami said, give it to him. So I had my second tumbler. Not that I required it, because in Andhra, the Andhra tumblers are huge. And we went to the third hamlet. Same thing repeated. Now third, by this time I was feeling a little not comfortable. In the fourth time, in the fourth place, again the tumbler came. I said, Swami, if I turn around, I said, Swami, I will spoil your car. if I have this tumbler, I'll spoil your car. But you did not have your morning tea, he says. I have had more than my tea. Now, this is Swami's sense of humor. You know, I mean, he drives home a lesson. There is nothing that he does without a purpose. He's driving home a lesson. Once when we were in Parthi, he called my mother and me for an interview. And in the course of the interview, he told my mother, hold out your hand. So she held out her hand. Then he put his hand and said, I promise I'm coming to your house for tea. The way he said it, you know, I'm coming for tea, you know, like that. So I almost smiled. Coming from Swami, it looked a little. Anyway, so mother laughed, actually literally laughed. She said, why are you laughing? She said, Swami, I've heard this for the last 3 years. You're saying you're coming to my house for tea. Promise? Okay, that is why I gave you my promise. I'm holding my hand out. Give you a promise. I'm coming to Bombay in 2 months. In 2 months, I'm coming to your house for tea. So mother went home. She painted a wall. Not that the walls needed painting. She polished the furniture. Not that the polish, but her lord was coming. She was happy. She changed the curtains. She did everything. Well, Swami came. One morning, he tells Mr. Shah to get inside the car. He tells me to get inside the car. I'm in front again. And he says, it's on top of the hill, don't worry. And he says, come on, let's go to your house. Now, every time Swami has come to Bombay, he has come to my house. So we are ready. But this time, he had promised Mommy that he would go to her house. So I felt it would be entirely selfish of me to ask Swami again that you should come to my house. So I didn't invite him. He said, let us go to your house. So I turned around to him and said, Swami, you told Mother that you are going to her house. Let's go to your house again. So again I made bold. I mean, I turned around and said, Swami, you said, you don't want me to come to your house. Now how do you answer this question? How do you? So I just kept quiet. The whole trip I kept quiet. But you know, when Swami gives you a problem, he also gives you a solution. We came down the hill and Swami stopped. He got out of the car to give darshan to people who were there. Some of the volunteers I knew very well. So I called Pramod Dalal. He was a good friend. He said, Pramod, do two things, Swami. Don't ask me any questions. Quickly phone my wife and say Swami will come. Because from Swami's place to my house is a distance of about 1 hour and 15 minutes drive. I stay at the extreme end of Mumbai, almost at Nariman Point, if anyone is familiar with Bombay. So I stay at the extreme end, and from Swami's place to there, it takes about an hour. It's a lovely drive along the outer drive. And I said, two things. Phone my wife, tell her to be ready to expect Swami. And we are ready. She's God bless her, she's always ready. And I said, phone my mother and tell her, don't ask any questions, just hop back to my house. Just hop over to my house. I'm sorry. Hop over to my house. So the long and the short of it is finally Swami sits in the car. I don't say a word because he says, well, you don't want me to come to my house. I didn't say a word. Swami took straight to my house. He had been there before. Straight to my house. He enters my living room. And there on one side, my father and mother are sitting and my family is sitting. He enters the room. Ayayo, what a selfish boy you have got. Instead of bringing me to your house, he has brought me to his house. My whole family is glaring at me. All because, you know, at my house, I follow a little bit of a regime, a little bit of a discipline with Swami. I don't allow too many liberties. But at my mother's house, the sisters and all thought they could take liberties. I mean, rightly so, why not? So they're all glaring at me. Mother and father kept quiet, smiling, didn't say a word. Swami stayed for an hour and a half at the house. During that time, 3 to 4 times he started to sort of pinprick my mother. See, this kind of a son I would not have. I'm saying to myself, Swami, what is the matter with you? What have I done? Finally, mother said, I think on the third time or the fourth time, mother said, Swami, can Keki bring you to any place that you don't want to go? Is he capable? Ah, good girl. Yeah. In 2 days, I'm coming to your house. And he went again. See, I had not invited him to my house. And every time he has come to Bombay, he has come to my house, thankfully. And this time, I didn't invite him because Swami is a very big stickler for protocol. But he didn't invite me. So then, but he went to mother's house also, along with his whole gang of Jogarao and all, everyone else. He went there. But this is Swami's sense of humor, directed at me. What kind of a son you have? And he went on and on and on. Oh, he's very. But he tries to tell us, life, being in the spiritual world doesn't mean you have to have this kind of a face. Now the other speaker before me spoke beautifully on the sense of real living. I think he brought the point home beautifully. I thought he did. He said that you must live life. Swami, this world is created for you, Swami says. It is for your enjoyment. How you use it badly, it is your problem. But you have to know, you don't have to feel any sorrow. Okay, somebody said, you don't, and I think some of the points he made is maybe not my place, out of my place, but about welcoming people or not becoming too Indianized in that religion or making it sound as a cult, I think are well-known points that your elders here should think over. Because my Rajan friend, I asked him out of my sincere desire to know that what should I wear? What is the protocol? I mean, should I go? I'll come dressed in white, and every one of you is in suited, booted, or not. No, America is not very formal, but that's way. So I was told, no, you should wear white. I said, but I don't have white. I have cream. Is it all right? Well, I brought this to white. No, I actually had white, but I think I've had a little bit too much of pastries here. I'm a man with a sweet tooth, so I think I could not fit into that white thing properly. So I. But I'm saying that mindset should get out of. You should wear white. White should be worn here in the heart. That should be. No, I'm not saying it for any. My mind should be here. White should be here. All these external things, you know. Once I was standing there in Prashanthi Nilayam where the state president came with a long list of things that he had done. Am I exceeding my time? A long list of things that he had done. And my stupidity, you know, sometimes I can't control myself. I don't know why I don't become wiser. So I said to Swami, good work, I said, good work. As if, good work, hai. Good work. Is it God's work? Listen to this carefully. It's a very great distinction. Good work, it is good work, but is it God's work? I said, what do you mean, Swami? All good works are God's work. Uh-huh. So I said, please explain. No, you think it out for yourself. But you know, he made that distinction. Good work, yes. Swami is not impressed. Not that doesn't mean that you don't do them. With the number of hospital visits you do, with the number of camps you hold, the number of bhajan centers you sing, with the number of things you do, he is impressed with the attitude with which you do those works. Is it the attitude of self-surrender? Is it the attitude of, as an offering to the Lord? Is it an attitude to do? He has done 5, so I must do 7 bhajan centers. He has done 10 visits to hospitals, so I must do 12. Is that it? Or what? This is what it's a beautiful sentence. It's a life-revealing sentence, you know. Once I tell you these stories, I'm sorry, I can only talk to you about my personal experiences. So I have to involve myself with I. But this is fantastic. Good work, yes. Is it God's work? Think about it. Again, the hint at transformation. Again, the hint at ye wanting you to transform yourself. Once, you know, sometimes Swami in the afternoon, at about 2 o'clock or so, sometimes he calls a few of us to talk to us. Sometimes he calls me, and I was there in his room, but I was that time alone, and a student was pressing Swami's legs. Now, as Swami sleeps, there is a shelf at the back of his thing. Sleeps means he lies down. There's a shelf. On the shelf was a timepiece, and the student was massaging Swami's feet. And I was standing, and Swami was lying down like this, and I was standing here, talking to him. We were talking. Suddenly the student gets up, suddenly, and he goes to the back of Swami's bed, and he takes the timepiece in his hand, and Swami says, "What are you doing?" He says, "The timepiece is slow, so I'm fixing it." Swami tells me, "See, mystery, this boy is doing padaseva, and his attention is on the timepiece." So the student, being young and brash and young, you know, Swami, he says, "Everything, I mean, this timepiece is also Swami. Everything is Swami." Swami was sleeping like, you know, he got up. Well, like he left. I can remember this. And I think he said, you don't say that. When you say that, it's an excuse. You don't say everything is Swami until you have realized it. If you really realize that the timepiece is Swami, then you have the right to say it. Otherwise, you're using that only as an excuse. Be attentive to the job at hand. Don't say, "Okay, I'm doing this." No, we all tend to say, "Okay, Swami's wish." Something goes wrong. He doesn't wish anything wrong to anyone. We always say, if something goes wrong, we say, "Oh, Swami's wish is also Swami's doing. Also Swami's." No, you're wrong. We are wrong. We are wrong. We say this. So nothing bad comes out of Swami. Oh, no, everything. No, nothing bad comes out of Swami. It is our desires, our karmas, our attitudes, our surroundings, our things that we put into that bad thing. And we use it as Swami's excuse. He says, Swami says, no. So this is another lesson you learn when you are around Swami. When you are around Swami, some people say, "Oh, how lucky you are with it." You've got to be like a razor's edge, you know. You've got to be sharp. In front of the fire, you can get burnt. Unless you are very, very, very careful. Because every fleeting thought is sometimes thought of. You know, when you have a thought, sometimes you do, you have a monkey mind, and Swami looks at you and you're finished. I mean, not that way. He's human, and he's God. He's taken a human form. And that is why he says very often to us, "You may worship me in a picture, but don't worship God as a picture." You can worship a picture as God, but not God as a picture. God is not a picture that you think of. God is the universal spirit that pervades every atom of your and my being. When I say yours, I mean myself. You know, this is the mistake we learn. Swami has come here to teach us to transform ourselves. And he keeps on saying, sometimes when he was not speaking, we said, people ask him to speak. He says, "What? I have spoken so long, I have written so long. What is the use of my going on speaking? Now you have to follow. All you have to do is follow his teachings." If you look at his books, everything is written there. You don't have to be confused. You don't have to be misled by people to whom ego or money is more important than Swami's teachings. How can you do this when you are with divinity? How can you do this? It's one of the most heinous sins that I can think of, people doing it. When you are with divinity and he has put it in black and white for you to follow, that means you have not read his teachings. That means you have not followed him. That means you have not understood him. Why should he transform himself into another person and speak through another person? That is not his idea. His idea is he should speak through you. And believe me, 24 hours he is there with you. And he will respond to you very quickly when you talk. And I'll tell you a strong story. Which is a real story, and please believe me when I say this, I will not speak anything. I was sitting there in my house one day. I just lost my dog. Now my dog was he has been described as a human being on four legs. It was really one of those very devoted spiritual dogs. Anyway, I lost him. As all things have to be lost, and I was sitting in my bedroom, and my family had gone to bury the dog. I said, "I'm not coming." Suddenly, Sai Baba appeared. Which Sai Baba? Shirdi Sai Baba. Shirdi Sai Baba appeared right in front of me as I'm seeing him, as God is my witness, as I'm seeing him right there in the flesh. absolutely looking, but looking fresher and more. That is what the astral body, if they assume the astral body to show you, they're glowing. So he said, why are you sad? He tells me. Now, I had not even mentally thought of Shirdi Sai Baba at that moment of time. I wasn't thinking. I wasn't saying, I was just a little gloomy at having lost a good friend. And he's with me. And he opens his kaftan, and from there pops out the head of my dog. But you know, like a plucked chicken, you know, I've seen those animals being plucked. He was without any fur, without anything. He was looking pink as if a newborn. Absolutely pink in skin. And then he has a conversation with me. Sai Baba. I wasn't thinking of Sai Baba. In fact, I have never heard of Shirdi Sai Baba before I met Satya Sai Baba, to tell you this, I personally. But often when I told Swami something, he said, don't talk to me. Go and talk to the old man downstairs. I said, who is the old man downstairs? Then I found out that in the prayer hall, he has a statue of Sai, of Shirdi White. He always tells me, go and complain to the old man. You always complain to him, no? I'm sorry. It's very cryptic to understand Swami, but it's beautiful. Very beautiful. Because you know nothing but good comes out of him. And then I become very bold. Yes, I'm sitting there. And I said, Baba, I have met Satya Sai Baba in this life. Now you have graced me with your vision. I've never seen Zarathustra. Can I have a vision of Zarathustra? As if I'm a little child. Oh, no problem. He's standing right here. He sort of, Sai moves away a little, and I see Zarathustra was surrounded by a yellow light. I almost passed out. When my family came back, they said, you are hallucinating. You must have eaten too much or something of that. So, no, I was not hallucinating. And later on, I found out that in the astral world, Zarathustra is moving around with a yellow light, and the ancient Greeks used to call him the golden star. He was known as the golden star. He was moving around with the yellow. But I saw him as clearly as I see you people right now. Now, why did I didn't? I don't think I deserved this kind of a darshan. But as the previous speaker rightly said, you do some things and things will come to you. You don't have to work very hard. You don't have to work very hard at your penance. Let it flow through you. You know, you don't have to sit down rigidly for meditation. Because if I sit down rigidly, I promise you, I think, who is the next patient coming? Or what is the other problem coming? What is the other problem? And my mind goes haywire about so many things that has gone wrong. You don't have to work very hard. You just got to be sincere. That's what Swami wants. You just got to be very, very sincere. Are you falling asleep? No? I'm sorry. No, I want to know whether... I'm sorry, I'm not picking on you. I'm not picking on you. No. She looks the most alert. Not really. I have to say something to make her. So what was I saying? What is this? What is this signal? Signpost now? Fifth or fourth? Sorry? What was it? Humor. Develop a sense of humor. What is the other signpost, do you think so? Communication. You are not able to communicate. You are not able to exist. Swami says you must learn to communicate. Communicate how? By your stance, by your behavior, by your hands, by your body posture, not only by your thought. So people in the organization, I've been told I've got 5 more minutes. I've always been told I've got 5 more minutes. I wish Swami would give me 5 more minutes. Okay, let me end by a saying that Mother Teresa used to make it very popular, and people used to think that it is Mother Teresa's poem. No, it was designed by Eliot. Harriet Eliot, and Mother Teresa made it very popular. She kept it on the wall of where she was sleeping. She kept it on the walls of her school. It says anyway, I'm going to read it to you with some excuse because I have forgotten my glasses. Are you all familiar with the anyway poem? You haven't read the book, that means. It's on the last page of the book. Last page of the book. Anyway, people are unreasonable, illogical and self-centered. Love them anyway. If you do good, people will accuse you of selfish, ulterior motives. Do good anyway. If you are a success, you will win false friends and true enemies. Succeed anyway. Honesty and frankness makes you vulnerable. Be honest and frank anyway. The good that you do today will be forgotten tomorrow. Do good anyway. The biggest people with the biggest ideas can be shot down by the smallest people with the smallest brains. Think big anyway. People favor underdogs, but follow only top dogs. Fight for some underdogs anyway. When you spend years building, what you spend years building may be destroyed overnight. Build anyway. Give the world the best you have, and you'll get kicked in the mouth. Give the world the best you've got anyway. Now, Mother Teresa slightly changed this into, it was never between you and I, it was always between you and him. Something like that. She has added a little flavor of her own. Now, when I used to read this, when I used to say some of these things, I teach, you know, and some of my students have written a book on me, which I hope you read carefully, because they might, those guys used to go, there the old man goes again with his stories. But you know, 10 years down the line, they write back to me, sir, what you said, we now find very useful in our life. You know? Now, when I said this, one of my students asked me, that he said, based on what you have said, now I'm an orthodontist, that's in the dental field. She was a Miss Bombay, very pretty girl. Why I'm saying pretty is a modern girl. She said, sir, I have written something. Can I read it out to you? I said, please do. She said, bite off more than you can chew, then chew it. Plan more than you can do, then do it. Point your arrow at your goal, take your aim, plan your way, and there you are. Arrange more time than you can spare, then spare it. Take more time than you can bear, then bear it. Take more, what is God? Plan your castle, now this is beautiful. Plan your castle in the air. Plan, dream big. Then build yourself into a ship to take you there. Don't stop building. Don't stop dreaming. Dream big. Swami has made this world for you and I. Bring big. I shall end with a blessing that is an old ancient blessing. May the road rise to meet you. May the wind be always at your back. May the sun shine warm on your face, and may the rains of good luck shower upon you. And until we meet again, may the good Lord hold you softly in the palm of his hand. Jai Sai Ram. Can I have your indulgence? Swami just reminded me that I have forgotten one thing to say. Can I say it, please? A month or two before he was admitted into hospital, Swami and I were talking. We were on the veranda. And we had just finished the cardiac conference. And we were talking of hospitals. And Swami said, Swami, the hospitals are doing well. I want something to be done to prevent people from going into hospitals. So I said, what do you mean? Every hospital, Swami, has a fitness center where we do. No. I want to build a wellness center. Teach them the ancient art of yoga. I said, where do you do it? In Bombay. Tell me which place where you meditate. I looked at him. I want you to teach them the ancient art of yoga. I said, Swami, I can't. Not you. I want them to learn the pranaya, all the other practices of our yoga. These are the things that build you up. These are the things you build. So I said, Swami, okay. So I went back to Bombay, told people, I luckily found the place for it. Now, we were a little short of cash. I mean, quite a bit short of cash. So we were looking at that drawing when a girl from Sydney, Australia, who I knew when she was about 8 or 9 years old, a friend of mine, she looks across and says, Keki, what are you doing? I said, I'm planning this wellness center. Oh, exactly my idea. Look, I've got such an amount, he says, and I've just sold my flat in Bombay. She used to stay in Bombay earlier. And I've got some rooms. I'll donate this to you. But it's in stocks and shares. So she said, thank you. But you know, Swami has taught us, we never really go and ask for. So I never bothered. And she went back to Sydney, Australia. She came back after 6 months and told me, you know what? Those shares have doubled. They have double. So I thought she had promised me a certain amount. So I thought she would take. No. This is all for Swami. Even today, she's having a fantastic coverage, though she herself is suffering from cancer. She's having a lot of things to do. So I took some sketches and I showed it to Swami. Swami blessed this. And he said, the wellness center. Then I thought, okay, he blessed the building. He blessed everything. Then I'll ask him, how do I utilize? The next thing I know, Swami is in hospital. There was no time. In fact, Swami had indicated to me that he was going in a variety of ways, 6 months before he left, in a variety of ways. And he was in hospital, so I went, I rushed from Bombay, but of course he was in the ICU, and I was sitting with his family, and I was saying, I've been there 50 years, I know the family members and all quite well, and I was sitting with the family waiting, but suddenly his nephew, whom I see every time at the veranda, and we have just said, Sairam, I've never talked to him for anything else, he turns around and says, how is your wellness center coming along? I got an electric current through me, honestly. I said, how do you know? He said, no, when Swami was unwell, we had asked permission, the family, to go and see him. And all Swami would talk about was the wellness center. He said, that will be this engine that drives humanity. So we've got the thing built. Somehow or the other, the money came by his grace. Now we've got to furnish it. But somehow, and people are being very cooperative. I have brought catalogs for those things. If anyone is interested in having the catalog, what the wellness center is about and all that, please take a look at it. The catalogs are there inside. Can I? I'll just show you one. They have been designed by somebody like you. It's just a catalog which gives you the entire feasibility. The building has a very nice appearance, blessed by Swami. And this is almost the last. Actually, I thought I must complete it because it was almost the last wish that he physically made to me, that this is what he wants to build. The building looks like this. Okay? So I am sorry to have interrupted the talk. I'm sorry for the talk. Jai Sai Ram. Is there any questions I'm supposed to answer? Or no, nothing. Anybody? Rajan, do I answer anything? No. If anyone has a question, well, I still have lots of questions in life. You're all bright, you're all lovely. I mean, please tell me how you do it. Because I still have questions, unfortunately. But no, nothing really. You leave it to him, but you must do your part. You must do your part. These guys have come because I find it difficult. So